All right, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. All right, this is Trigger Warning with Travis Trimble. I'm here with my very first guest, Raul Mendoza. What's up, man?
Hey man, it's Raul Alejandro Mendoza.
I
You know what
can't
I'm
roll it
like?
like
Yeah,
that.
I know. It's only select people like us can roll them. Yeah, no, I'm doing good, bro. I'm doing good. It's a nice Saturday night. What else to do on a late Saturday night than podcast?
That's right, that's right. So just give you guys a little heads up on what this is going to be. It's basically just going to be open-ended. I'm just going to come here. I'm going to talk to people. We're going to talk about whatever we want, and you guys are going to listen. So it's basically how this is going to work. So where do you want to start, Raul? You have any ideas?
You want me to introduce myself?
Yeah, that's cool. That's cool. Tell them why you're here, who you are.
All right. So my name is Raul Alejandro Mendoza. I am a Chicano filmmaker. I am from Brownsville, Texas. That's the last city you hit in the southern tip of Texas before you get to Mexico. But I'm currently living in Houston, the University of Houston. I'm also the creator of the Nerdcore. It is a podcast brand that pushes for diversity and acceptance of nerd culture. We talk about everything nerd, so movies, TV, video games, anime, whatever you call it, whatever you want, we cover it. I also do my own photography and stuff like that, but my main focus is my film as my because I'm a film student. I know Travis because we run a pro wrestling group together. And we've been friends for like a long time. So that group is pretty damn old. So I want to say it's a good like 4 to 5 years that we've known each other.
Yeah, somewhere around there.
Because I think I just had started college when we were gonna when we st when we became admins. So when we started getting really close. So I want to say it's like 4 years because I've been in college for 4 years.
Yeah, I
God damn.
agree. I agree.
So that's how we know each other. What's up?
No, I was just waiting for you to finish your introduction. And then I was gonna ask you a question.
Okay, yeah. Yeah, and also Travis and I used to have the greatest bromance on the earth, except he left me for Justin. Justin said that we're not his real friends. So then Travis decided to betray me when he said he liked long walks on the beach with Damone. So now I guess Damone is his main guy. So I feel betrayed. But guess what? And then there's also like the side thing when he's with Mikey, but that's like every now and then. I guess what I'm just trying to say is that Travis is a hoe. Yeah. So I've known Travis for a long time. I said, hey, he told me, hey, what do you think about me making a podcast? I'm like, dude, you don't even got to tell me about it. Just do it. And he was like, all right, I'll probably come back to you. I'm going to plan it, see if I can get my first guest. I'm like, hey, man, don't plan it. That delays the whole process of making this. So just guess too if it means you getting a freaking episode out. So here we are, we're doing it, and I'm gonna let you ask the next questions because I think I don't need to be introducing myself as long as I am.
No, it's cool. Okay, so explain to people what Chicano actually means.
Damn. So without getting heavily political, Chicano was a movement in the 60s, the Chicano movement. It was a bunch of Latino people who were fed up with the system after not getting the rights they deserved. So they were still being segregated in schools after Brown versus the Board of Education cleared up. So you know they integrated schools, but since Latinos didn't fall into this gray space where it's like you weren't white, but you also weren't black. So they still had the power to, segregate you. So this movement rose up, and it was mostly in my area that I'm at, Texas, Colorado, California, New Mexico, all those areas that were once Mexican territories were rising up and, kind of rebelling against this idea of the treatment of Latinos in the country. At the time, we were also being lynched very heavily too. I believe the number is astronomically high in Texas of lynchings of Latinos, mainly that you can't find an accurate number because they were done by the Texas Rangers. And, you know, they covered it up. But, you know, the basis of Chicano is a person inside the Latino community who sees the struggle of their people and will do everything and anything to fight for that. You know, my activism shows itself in my art. I've also met with countless activists and done my part to try to further the fight for equal treatment of Latinos in the state, the country, in the world. So that's basically Chicano. You know, Chicano back then was a lot different, but now I guess it's turned into this more free way of not being a Latino, but also not being Hispanic, because, you know, Hispanic is a very, very limited term. Hispanic kind of tries to erase the fact that a lot of us still have connections to our indigenous heritage. So Hispanic really only Spanish European part of our heritage, and it doesn't encompass the whole indigenous aspect. That's, you know, Latino is a term that we created, the community, but for people who wanted a more intimate version of it, they created Chicano. I identify with Chicano because I, you know, in my basis of my art is identity and being a person of Latin descent. And yeah, I think I tried to give you that. I gave you the most oversimplified version of it if I could.
No, that was actually super interesting because I did not know what the meaning was. That's why I asked the question. I'm sure plenty of people listening didn't know either. It's actually super interesting. I did not know all that information.
It's this huge movement in the 60s, and it was pretty successful. It led to Hernandez versus Texas, which basically gave more rights and, you know, equal integration into schools. And there's a lot of books and stuff that you can read up on the movement, but basically it was more it was a movement in the state level. It was nothing like the civil rights movement where it went to like national and federal level, where, you know, they passed the voting rights of 1965 and stuff like that.
Okay, cool. Just so you guys know, this is exactly why I wanted to start this podcast. I took this model, this format, from the Joe Rogan Experience, which I'm sure everybody has heard about at this point. It's a huge podcast right now, especially with the Elon Musk thing. But this is like, I wanted it to be able to, I could talk to people whoever I wanted and have fun, whatever, but also learn things and get new information, because really that's what this is all about. Alright, so what do you want to talk about? You want to talk about your podcast? You want to talk about wrestling? You want to talk about music? You want to talk about movies? What do you want to talk about first?
I guess I can talk about the podcast first. I guess that's the biggest thing going on for me right now.
Okay, cool.
So a year ago, a year and a month ago, I started the Nerdcore. We launched, it was this brainchild, actually, because I had only a week. I had asked my friend Luis, who is now the co-host of the Nerd Chicano show. I told Luis, hey, what would you think about making a podcast where we talk about all these nerdy things? Because I had noticed that every time we go to the movies, we come out, we just, you know, we talk about the movie and we review it together, just in conversations. And I was doing YouTube at the time, and I think you remember, because I would tell you, hey guys, you guys could watch my vlogs and stuff. And, you know, some of y'all actually watched it. And I remember one of my videos that I had put up was a Doctor Strange review. And I really liked the way I formatted that, but I never liked YouTube because when it comes to the way that I create, I've noticed that I'm best behind the camera and envisioning what I want to put on screen instead of me having to be in front of the camera and talk. I like podcasts because of that reason, because I don't have to talk all in front of a camera. I can just talk into the microphone and just be as fluent as I can. The only time that I have to be in front of a camera is for the live shows that we do. But yeah, we launched the Nerdcore, and the first episode we ever did was a review of Narcos season 3? Yeah, season 3. It was lots of fun, and originally it was bi-weekly. So we weren't even putting out episodes at a consistent basis. But Luis had gone through some stuff, and I was left with basically... So the third episode, my friend who I had known for a very, very long time, his name is Brad Simmons, he did a company called This Is Local Love that would pair up with local musicians and artists and basically promote them while creating shirts and merchandise to sell of their own brand. Him and I, we had been friends for a very long time, ever since I started Twitter. I started Twitter like in 2012, Travis, like, you know, in the prime time of Twitter. Nobody right. was trying to go viral in 2020. Well, Stuart wasn't the very, you know, I'm not saying this in a bad way, but it wasn't the very PC internet you see now. You know, 2012 Twitter was fucking different, dude.
Oh, so for sure.
I had known for Brad since then, and we kind of grew a very working relationship. We wanted to do streaming together at one point, but that fell through because, you know, buying gear to record video game content is so freaking expensive. But I had Brad on for the third episode, and he was like, we did the Last Jedi trailer when it came out. And that was huge at the time. So we were like, oh, yeah, we got to do this. So I said, after this trailer premieres, I'm going to record and we'll upload it tomorrow. We did that, and Brad brought up the ideas like, hey, I'll be a recurring guest. I don't know if your co-host is coming back, but I can just be a recurring guest. After having him on for the next episode when we did Stranger Things review, I kind of told him, hey, Brad, you're co-host from now on. You know, I didn't... In a way, I kind of said to Luis, like, you know, like, hey, we're kind of moving on without you. But I never forgot about Luis, you know, because Luis was just going through things that I needed him to kind of work on that before he could come clear-headed to come back. And he did come back clear-headed, and we are doing the Nerd Chicano show now. So we have the main podcast. We have the Nerdcore podcast. Then we have... The Gamer Core, which we started because we saw that a lot of people liked video game content. And we were like, why don't we just do that? Like, why don't we just make a separate podcast? I said, okay, that doesn't seem too bad to me. I mean, it's just another show that I got to do. It's fine. All right. So then that that happened. We added Ashley to our team. Ashley is from Los Angeles, California. She lives there. She is this awesome girl who's really, really knowledgeable about video games, and she's so good at it that I never noticed how much we needed her until we had her for the first episode. She was the first person I went to about co-hosting the show with me and Brad. And after trying her out, I'm like, oh, yeah, I don't even need to consider anybody. You got the job. Like, that's yours. That's yours to take. And I think later on in time, if I ever need a pushback from another show, I think I'd leave it in great hands to Ashley, because she could take over that show if she wanted to. So we rebooted the Nerdy Chicano show. Now I do it with Luis. And we also have a Patreon, which, can I plug that?
Yeah, of course. Plug whatever you want. Plug it all.
All right. All you got to do is go to www.patreon.com/nerdcore. You look at tiers that you can have. $1, $2, $5, $10, $15. No, not $10. I'm sorry. $1, $2, $5, $15, $25, $50, and then $100 is the highest you can go. Each tier gets you things. You know, the $1 tier gets you episodes a day early, an on-air thank you. Access to the live pre-show that we do 15 minutes before we go live on the pre-show on the regular live shows on YouTube. So those are pretty cool, and those are only exclusive to y'all. So yeah, we started Patreon. We got some patrons that support us there. So, you know, we make enough content to supply. So now basically the podcast is, you know, pumping out episodes every day. We do 4 episodes of the main podcast. We do 1 episode of the Gamer Core. We do 1 episode of Nerd Chicano Show. And we just added Book It to the feed. So that premieres every Friday along with the Gamer Core. So Book It is the podcast that you do with Mike and Damon. I mean, Damon. So, you know, those are really good additions. basically, I'm running my own podcast empire over here, dude.
Yeah.
And I'm kind of glad because, you know, I really like the hustle. I told you, you know, like, don't even think about it. You know, it's thinking about it delays the process because the way I see it, you got to eat shit for 5 years, bro. Like 5 to 10 years for you to really put yourself out there. You know, I'm like, I've tweeted this so many times, like, I'm willing to sacrifice my early 20s and my 20s and my early 30s to be able to build this shit into like an empire. And I'm willing to eat shit for the next 5 to 10 years. So that way this brand I'm growing can be something big so it can inspire other people to make podcasts. So yeah, that's my talk about my podcast. I feel like I just gave you like a whole rant, dude.
No, I like it. I like it. I don't want it to be the one talking mostly. I would like to listen more so and give my feedback. There's one thing I was going to ask you, and I can't remember what it was. What was it?
Was it about the podcast?
It was about the podcast. I don't remember. We'll come back to it.
Right.
Also, I took this... Another person I took this format from is Joe Budden. He does the same thing, where it's open-ended.
Oh, yeah.
He talks to people.
Joe Budden.
Joe Budden and Joe Rogan. Yeah. It's Joe's. It's a Joe thing.
Just the Joe show.
Yes, just the Joe show. So, yeah, like he said, I am also on a podcast called Book It with Mike Jasko. He likes to be called Hi-Fi Mike. And then Damone Allen. Yeah, they're both old men with children. But... It's okay. They got kids and bills. Kids and bills.
Yeah. And.
Raul?
Travis?
Yep, I got you. I can hear you now.
Travis?
I can hear you. Can you hear me?
Hello?
Hello?
Travis?
Hello?
Oh, I'm sorry.
No, you're good. You're good. Technical difficulties, folks.
Yeah, no worries. You're not married by common law yet, are you?
No. There's no common law in Ohio.
Oh, god damn, okay.
Yeah, we're in the modern world over here. Unlike you Texans that live in your own planet.
Yeah.
So there's no common law marriage in Ohio. I don't have I'm not married, no kids.
Man, you're living a good life.
Yeah.
I'm one up, man. I'm single, no kids, no nothing.
Yeah.
I'm just
You gotta change that though. You gotta go out there and get you a girl.
Yeah, you know, man, like I have so much bad luck in the lady department. I guess we can go into that the next topic if you want, man.
Yeah, go ahead, shoot.
Always been, and I just talked about this on the Nerd Chicano show today, which you'll be able to listen to it on tomorrow.
Okay.
Travis. But I've never had trouble making friends with women, but I've always been intimidated to profess my feelings for them if I like them. I don't know why. It was something I had since when I was a kid, and it's something I'm noticing when I'm an adult. I'm horrible at the lady department. The only woman I've ever been with romantically, if I could even say that, because it felt so confusing as to I don't know what the hell was going on. She was not a good person. So I got myself out of that. And I'm just so intimidated by women. And it's not in the way, like, if I don't know my sexuality and shit, because I know I'm straight. Like, I you know.
No, yeah, I get what you're saying.
Yeah, it's like, you know, I mean, it doesn't really matter because, you know, like if Brad Pitt wanted a peck or two, you know, I wouldn't deny it. But I know I'm sure. So it's not like if I'm confused or something. I've just always been intimidated by women and telling them exactly how I feel when I have feelings for them. So,
yeah.
I just don't know.
You think it's a confidence issue?
What's up? I think it is a confidence issue.
Yeah.
It
just sucks because you're a cool dude. You're very charismatic.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, but I'm also disabled, man. So you know.
I was about to bring that up. So explain that to everybody, yeah. So you can understand.
Yeah. So I'm visually disabled. I'm basically legally blind. I'm not allowed to drive by my orders of my specialist. I use the walking stick to get around campus and stuff. I basically grew up with basically my optic nerves didn't develop as well as they should have, and that literally brought down my sight. So you know the actual accurate term that I'm supposed to be using is visually impaired, but I'm also considered disabled. But it's just a long gray area where I fall into. But I receive help by the government helping me through college and stuff, but I don't receive a disability check. So it's a kind of an identity issue there, but basically I am disabled because it does impair the way I function in the world. You know, I can't right. drive. I can't read books if the text is too small.
So you have to get one of those big remotes for your TV, right?
No, not those, dude. Calm down, okay? No. But yeah, you know, that's been something I've been dealing with since I was a kid. And, you know, I got bullied a lot for it in, like, elementary and middle school. High school, it was actually more about my weight that I got bullied for than anything. But now I guess it's just I've come to realize that, you know, this is the way I am and I'm not really – nothing's going to change it. So I might just embrace who I am. And, you know, sometimes it does get hard to go through the day because – if you're not disabled, you don't notice this, but you get so many pity eyes of people feeling so sorry for you and people being like, just looking at you like, wow, I feel so sorry for him. Like, look, he has to walk with a cane and he probably can't see, you know, that gets so tiring, dude. And then you also run into the ignorant people who like think they can talk down on you because you can't do things that they can. I've run into so many of those people and it really does piss me off. But at the same time, like, hey, you guys are the ones that are ignorant. Like at the end of the day, you look bad. I don't look bad.
Exactly.
You also, Oh, hold up, drivers. And you also encounter people who use you because it makes their self-image look good. And when it's not useful anymore, they kind of just throw you off to the side. So yeah, that's been my encounters with my disability, dude.
Yeah, I definitely can say, well, one, I did not know that you walked around with a cane. That's news to me. Not aware.
Yeah, I've shown y'all a picture of my cane.
I don't remember. I'm gonna be honest. Yeah. This isn't just me. This is everybody in that group chat. We only pay attention to about 13% of what happens in that group chat. There's times where we're just talking to ourselves.
So my cane... Honestly, Travis, I should have, and I'm going to say this on here. It's something that I need to get used to telling myself in general. I should have gotten my cane at age 18. Yeah. I should have, because it's so helpful, dude. I'm 21 right now. I should have had this like around 18, 17, because it's so much more helpful than I've noticed. And my brother's legally blind. He's like actually blind from one eye and stuff, and he uses a cane too. And I just noticed, like, when I saw him using, I'm like, it looks like it actually helps. And now that I have it, I'm like, wow, I should have had this since I was like 16, 17, or 18.
Right. Okay. So that's interesting that you said your brother's blind as well, or you're not blind, but you know what I mean? Visually impaired, same wheelhouse. Is it a genetic thing?
We don't know where it comes from because my little brother isn't in the same thing. You know, it's just, I guess, something that just goes on, man. I guess it's some late ancestor that had it, and it just came to us too instead of the little one. I don't know, man. I really wish I could have an answer to that, if it's genetic or not, but I really don't have an answer to that.
Yeah, because that's weird that you both would have the same or very similar conditions. Neither one of your parents have any issues, right?
Nah, my mom uses glasses, but that's about it.
I'm not blind.
Yeah, my brother has glaucoma. I have nystagmus. So if you were to see me in real life, you know, my eyes constantly move. Like, they're constantly moving from side to side. That's because of my nystagmus. But that is what caused the optic nerves to not be able to develop correctly. So that's why I have my vision problems. But I also have like astigmatism, I heard, and I also have myopia and stuff like that. I have so many things in the eyes that I can't even remember what the hell it is. But I definitely got the better end of the stick because my brother has lost his left eye. Like that, yeah. He can't see out of that.
Was that a pun? You said the better end of the stick.
What do you mean? Yeah, I guess. Okay.
I can say that in the past 4, 5, 3, I don't know how many years we've been friends, you have definitely grown more comfortable with your disability.
Oh, yeah.
Because I can remember the times where it wasn't even like, we weren't even allowed to speak about it, let alone joke about it. And now it's you are usually the one making the jokes now.
Yeah.
So how that went, how you went to not take it yourself and your disability so seriously, and how you learned how to be lighthearted with it.
Well, I mean, first of all, I let y'all do the jokes because you've known me for so long. It's kind of like I've opened up to that area about it, you know? But any random person who barely knows me for like a week or two cannot talk about that stuff because that's a very intimate part of my life that I don't really open up to everybody. You know, they can see that I'm disabled, but I'm not going to open up my true feelings about how I feel about it. So the jokes will come later on in my life where I can, like, you know, like 1 or 2 years after knowing you. And it depends. If I know that there's a connection where I feel like the friendship is actually very genuine and you're coming from a good place, then yeah, I let you joke a little bit with it. But if I've known you for like a month or two, I'm not letting you joke about that shit. Because I don't know yet if you're genuine enough to know if you're making fun of me or if you're just trying to make me have a good time and just forget for a minute that I'm disabled. Because I've known too many people who made fun of it, where it's like I can distinguish now, but I can't distinguish it with a person I barely know. When did I come to terms with it? I want to say my second year of college. So it was right after getting out of Texas Tech. I moved back home. I met a friend in my friend's cinema class, and I'm going to tell Mariana after I get off this, I mentioned it. She didn't mind that I was disabled. You know, she's a really good friend of mine, and she would say, like, you know, just be safe going over there and stuff and walking around campus. But we would also joke about, you know, how the cane is very fashionable, or how, like, it looks like it's just a commodity to look fashionable. And I'm like, yeah, because it felt genuine coming from her. And when I noticed that I can meet humans that want to have a genuine connection with me as friends, but also recognize that I am disabled, I noticed that, Raul, you're just this way and there's no other way to go about it, but this is who you are. And I've started to embrace who I am because, you know, being disabled is my identity. So when people would look at me and, you know, they look at me with those eyes of pity and where people would feel sorry for me being disabled, I would realize that, just don't feel sorry for me because this is who I am and I don't mind. Like, you know, it's who I am. It's part of who I am. I don't want the treatment to make me forget that I'm disabled. I kind of wanted the treatment to be like, hey, you're disabled, but you're still a really good person and you're still able to do so many things with the limitations that you have in your life. You know, I'm able to get around campus. Sometimes I need an escort to go to certain places because they're so hidden in campus, but I can make it from my dorm to my classes and back, and I think that's a huge milestone to me.
Oh, I definitely agree with that. Yeah, I definitely agree. I honestly I don't remember that you're disabled. 99% of the time. You know, I don't see you. That's the thing.
Yeah. But yeah, if we ever hung out in real life, you would notice because, I mean, first of all, I have the cane on me and I obviously walk a lot slower because I don't want to trip over anything. Yeah. Going upstairs was the biggest shit ever, Travis. Before I got my before I got my cane, I would literally hold for dear life to the rails because those stairs just blended in, bro. Like, it was terrible, man. I don't know how I survived without having a freaking cane, man.
Actually thinking about that is scary for me, just like thinking about it, like close your eyes and walk up the stairs. Like, I don't even like going up my stairs in the dark.
Yeah. It's terrifying, dude. Like, just imagine, like, you're walking down the stairs and they all look like just one huge stair.
Mm.
That's how it is for me. But now that I have the cane, I can just, you know, go down slowly and hold on, but also feel around to see if the next stair is coming up. But yeah. And I'm glad you brought up that I've grown as a person. I feel like I've grown as a person because I've learned to accept myself as who I am. I'm disabled and I don't care that if people know that, because that is who I am and that's part of me. It's always going to be part of me.
Well, I'm proud of you for that. That's honestly, as your friend, I'm proud of you for that.
Yeah, thank
you. So going from here, just to keep tying into the confidence issue and the girl situation, everything, do you think your mental health has anything to do with that?
Bro, my mental health has to do a lot of things, man. Yeah, you know, we're getting into the cream of the crop here, man. Yeah,
I mean, we're 30 minutes in, might as well. Good.
Yeah, I suffer from a bipolar disorder. So for people who think they know what that means, and if you are just consuming the media version of it, no, I'm not crazy. I don't have two different parts where I'm like super like
manic.
I get mad quickly or something like that. No, like that's not how it is. It's not the way that the TV shows pursue it to be. Basically, I have days where I'm manic and I have days when I have, you know, for me, it's actually not days. I have weeks that I'm manic and then I have weeks that I'm very depressed.
Yeah.
So in my manic episodes, it's when like I just feel like my brain is going 1,000 miles per hour and I can't control it. And like I would just see myself constantly not even wanting to talk to people because I'll talk so fast that I can't even understand myself at all. But it's because my brain is just going so fast and I have all this excess amount of energy because I guess it's just the way that my brain works. And then on my depressed days, before it was a lot harder to go out and face the world. But now since I've been on medication for like about 3-4 years, my medication has given me my life back. But before, you know this, because you guys were some of the main people I vented to. It's like, you know, I didn't want to get up from bed. I didn't want to do anything. And a lot of it had to do where I was living at the time, and also just coming to terms with like what am I doing with my life, because I was always so scared that I'm not living 100% of the life that I could be, because I wasn't studying what I loved, I wasn't being in a place that I love, I was surrounded by so much negativity and racism where I lived, and it was just not a good area for me to be. So on my depressive days, I didn't want to talk to anybody, I'd be really irritable. You know, I'd still take a shower and brush my teeth because I feel like that was at least something I had to make myself do. But wanting to stay in bed was such a huge part. Like I didn't even want to leave the room. You know, I didn't even want to go to class. My grades suffered because of it. But the good thing is that those classes that suffered because of it, I ended up making up, or I just didn't need them anymore because I wasn't doing engineering anymore.
So I'm glad you went with that. Not to cut you off, but you gave me a little segue that I wanted to go into. Because you had said something that was interesting to me that I meant to get into earlier, but I forgot. So you talked about Texas Tech.
Yeah.
And you talked about how you were depressed and where you were living. And I'm pretty sure, if I remember correctly, that was during that time, correct?
Yeah, that first year of college, bro.
Yeah. So you were you were majoring in engineering, correct?
Yes, my first semester I majored in chemical engineering.
Chemical engineering, okay. And then you were depressed. You said you were surrounded by racism. To me, it sounds like Sounds like all this stuff was kind of playing into who you are now. I mean, going with the Nerdy Chicano show,
Yeah.
focusing so much on your art, and like, I'm super proud of you for that. Because I'm, if for anybody listening to this and doesn't understand what I am or who I am or how I think and believe in, I believe in chasing your dreams no matter what. I'm very much so for the starving artist. And I don't like people that say, like,
I don't think a lot of people get that, dude. It's like the starving artist, it's not bad. It's actually very motivational because you have to eat shit, man. Like, if you want to just go into a field that guarantees you a job and not grind for it, there's absolutely no source of not validation. I want to say like no genuine feel of accomplishment in that. When I told my parents, like, I want to make movies for the rest of my life, they were like, but are you going to get a job after that? Because, I want you to be like, I'll get work. I'll be able to eat, but I won't be able to live the way I want. I see myself living in the next 5 to 10 years.
Yeah.
But it's fine because I'm willing to live, like, I'm willing to eat shit for the next 5 to 10 years or 15. I don't, like, however long it takes for me to get there. I'm willing to be the starving artist, and I think you get that too because you're a starving art. You are an artist too. You make music, and I think the basis of you seeing musicians is that they kind of want it in the next 6 to 8 months, right? And they don't
Yeah.
want to work for it in the next 5 years.
Exactly. One of the things that this is working very well. I hope this actually records, guys. If this doesn't, I'm gonna be pretty pissed. This is going
I don't
exactly
think.
how I wanted it to. What'd you say?
I don't think I could replicate the message if it doesn't record,
Yeah, I
dude.
know, I know. Either way, this is a good talk, so it don't even matter. But where was I going with this? So you said your parents talk about what are you going to do for work, or what are you going to have for work?
Yeah.
So that's one of the my biggest pet peeves is like for an artist or someone, a creator, an individual thinker. You mean somebody that's the true visionaries, the revolutionaries of a generation. They're constantly told, "What's plan B? What's your plan B? What's your plan B?" But why aren't we asking the doctors the same thing?
Yeah, it's like, what happens when you get a stroke and you can't work anymore?
Exactly. Or in your case, like you were going for a very safe career path. Chemical engineering was very safe, very profitable, very whatever. And I don't know if you thought that was your dream when you began, but I know people who have, and then they get there and they realize it's just not for them. But they were never ever asked, what's your plan B? So now they're 23 years old, stuck, have no plan, no idea what's going on, and they're back to this age of 15.
I'm gonna cut you off for a little bit. Chemical engineers, once they go into the job, starting salary starts around like 60K. I would have been living pretty well, and I wasn't. And it wasn't that I sucked at math or anything. I was good. I was good at math. Not anymore because I haven't practiced anymore. But so that way people don't get, like, and they listen and they're like, oh, well, you probably sucked at math, and that's why you realized that it was too hard and you gave up. Like, nah. I was good at math. I was good at chemistry. That was going to be no problem. If I would have applied myself to the way I'm applying myself to what I love in filmmaking, then I would have graduated a while ago in this degree and probably would have had a pretty good job and I probably would have been making good money right now. But I couldn't see myself working at a desk at a refinery plant, checking pressures for chemicals and stuff like that. That's just not me.
Yeah, it sounds like that's exactly what I'm saying. It's just you realize what your true love is when you have to start working for something else. So my message, if this does get out to the people, for everybody listening, is chase your dreams no matter what. Don't let people tell you can't do it. Anybody can do whatever they set their mind to. You just have to be willing to work for it.
If
But
you're not willing to put the time in, what's the whole point of it?
exactly.
especially for you young filmmakers that are probably going to be listening to this, and I hope you are. If your doubt is that you don't have good gear to make movies, then I need you to pick up that fucking iPhone that you have next to you, or that fucking Samsung Galaxy S phone, and realize that Steven Soderbergh put out one of the best horror films in the last fucking 5 years, and he shot that shit with an iPhone 7. And he was able to sell that to a fucking distributor and put it out. You're going to say about it, Steven Soderbergh, he's had so much time but to develop his craft. But you also have to realize it was shot on a fucking iPhone. And it was shown worldwide in theaters.
What film is this?
So you have Unsane. It's on Amazon Prime if you want to watch it. Okay. Has Clara Foy. It's like a very psychological thriller horror kind of movie. But it's very, very mindfucky, dude. It's basically she believes that she has a stalker who is following her, and she goes to get help, but they send her to a mental health, to a psych ward, and they basically she signs the contract. She thinks it's like the doctor patient confidentiality papers and stuff like that, but it's actually keeps her there at the psych ward for a long time. So instead of people believing that it's actually a stalker who is there, she is being like basically groomed into believing that she's mentally ill and stuff like that. It's a really, really good film. And it's up on Amazon Prime if you want to watch it, Travis.
Okay, cool. I will definitely check that out.
Yeah, but it was all shot in that.
Yeah, I mean, I started my music career with a rock band mic. That's what I recorded on.
Hell yeah.
So it is what it is. You know what I mean? The only thing stopping you, the only thing in between you and your dreams is fear and air. And air doesn't weigh that much.
Mm-hmm.
So stop being scared. Stop being lazy. Chase your dreams.
Yeah.
Because like not everybody's going to make it, but a lot more people make it or could make it than the amount of people that try.
I think the best piece of motivation I can give anybody right now who wants to achieve like a dream, it's like the only motivation you need, and I'm kind of stealing this from Gary Vaynerchuk a little bit, because it was one video that I saw from him that really, really pushed it on me. But I'm like, your only motivation should be that you're going to die one day. You can die tomorrow. The idea of death should be your motivation to chase your dream and to do as much as you can in the time that you're given, because we don't know when we're going to die. So your only motivation that you need, you don't even need a fucking video. You just need to realize that you are going to die one day. You are going to cease to exist. And that should be enough motivation for you to do what you love in your life.
Yeah, that was deep.
Yeah.
I like that. That was nice. All right, so before we move on from this segment and go into something more fun, or lighthearted, I guess, because I'm not saying this isn't fun. This is great. But we have a lot of similar interests I want to get into as well. But my favorite quote of all time is, "But what if I fall? Oh, but darling, what if you fly?"
Yeah.
That's my favorite quote. So, like, yeah, it's that means so much to me. What were you going to say, though?
Is that a fucking song?
It might be. I don't know where I came. I just saw it online. Honestly.
Okay.
But that's my favorite quote of all. Like, it's on all my social media. I don't even know what my social media is. I was about to plug it, but I don't even know what it is. I will have social media next episode for this podcast and for myself as a entertainer.
Yeah. Right. Go ahead. Yeah, I like that quote, dude. And I'm sorry. I'm gonna keep on going back to Gary V, because I think he's just one of so fucking smart, dude. If you're not watching Gary V's content on YouTube, then you're missing out, because he really gives detailed advice into how you can use, you know, social media and stuff like that to grow your brand and your business. But I think we are living in the best time to grow a business, because we have a fucking phone that has access to the internet, where kids these days can just make a YouTube account and basically grow a business there you know, we have kids that are 13 growing a YouTube channel and who will in the next 5 years be able to make money off of it. You know, I think if you're just not, if you're not willing to, I think your only excuse for not making it is that you're not willing to work for it.
I 100% agree with that. Definitely agree with that. But this is a good segue into the next segment. One guy that has put in the work and has made sure that he is the biggest thing in his profession is Conor fucking McGregor. Did you Did you see the highlights from that press conference?
Oh yeah, I saw it. I saw it. Fucking hilarious! I have so much respect for Conor.
Oh, me too. It is crazy.
Yeah. You know, I understand the whole gimmick that sells for him being the very, like, outspoken kind of guy. But he's worked so much for what he has. It's hard for me not to respect the dude. You know, I may not like the way he presents himself out in public. It does make me laugh. But the guy has came from literal shit and has worked his ass off to get to where he is. You're going to agree with me. He is the face of MMA right now.
Oh, 100%. There's nobody even close to him. Correct me if I'm wrong. Go ahead.
Hold up. I would go as far to say that he is the face of sports at the moment.
Oh, I agree with that. I don't know anybody bigger than him right now. He sold that fight, not Mayweather.
Yeah. Oh, 100%, dude. Nobody was watching that because it was Mayweather was going to fight Conor. It was because Conor was, I'm sorry, it wasn't because Conor was going to fight Mayweather. It's because Mayweather was going to fight Conor.
Exactly.
People were seeing if Conor was going to get the ass whooping of a long, the ass whooping of the century, you know. And then when they said that, oh, that he wants the rematch in the octagon, is going to be the same thing. People aren't watching that because of Mayweather. They want to see Conor mauled this motherfucker in that ring, dude.
That's right. Yeah. I think they'd pay to see Conor fight his shadow at this point. Yeah. So you have a prediction? Is it going to be Conor or Khabib?
Look, man, I want to say it's probably Conor if they want to extend it to make more money off like a trilogy. But if they're like, yeah, I don't think we can replicate this again, I think it'd probably be just either way. I think Conor wins it. Or if he doesn't, then both men are still leaving that stadium with so much cash in their pocket.
True. That's true.
I would hope it's Conor because it would segue us into a trilogy if possible. But if it's Mayweather, then that's really all she wrote.
Right. Excuse me. What about what's your prediction for Conor versus Khabib on October 6th?
Oh, I think Conor takes it, man. I don't think Khabib, honestly, man, I don't think Khabib has what it takes to beat Conor.
Yeah,
I was wrong. I said the same thing about Diaz when he fought him the first time. I said, "Oh, there's no way Conor doesn't make it out of this." And I think Conor was surprised because he didn't think he was going to go for the ground game.
Yeah.
I think Conor relied on the striking, and he forgot that, you know, that Diaz is a really good ground game as well. So I could be wrong, bro, and Khabib could take it.
Yeah, Khabib is really good. That's the only thing. What is he, 26, 27 and 0, something like that? And that is as you just said, Conor does rely on his striking, and
yeah.
Khabib is a fucking animal on the ground. Yeah. He is a gorilla. Like, literally, he looks like a gorilla. But
yeah, I'm glad we're talking to you because I fucking love MMA, dude.
Yeah, I do too.
I'm not able to watch every pay-per-view, but I fucking love MMA.
Yeah. I'm much more like, it's the same thing with like wrestling for me. Is I'm much more, I follow it, but I don't watch it a lot. I watch the people I care about, obviously. Like when Jones comes out, I will definitely watch his fight.
Or we can out too.
You said, what is it?
Velasquez, when Velasquez, I mean, we're
yes,
both.
Yeah. Velasquez, in my opinion, is the greatest heavyweight of all time.
Yeah.
I don't care.
We're Velasquez marks. Yeah.
Yeah. When I saw he was training at the Performance Center for WWE, I marked out a little bit. I was like, damn. Yeah. I'll take it.
Low key, I'm kind of funny, bro. I was like, oh, Kane comes over. I would have Kane come over just to be Brock Lesnar again in his first match.
That's so funny.
Oh, man.
You think, who you got, DC or Lesnar?
Oh, man, I really don't want that match to happen, but part of me wants his ass.
You're a big Jones fan, aren't you?
No, I'm not a big Jones fan. I'm a big GSP fan.
GSP, okay.
I love GSP.
Is GSP your GOAT? You think he's the best ever?
Would go, you know, bypassing how much I love Cain Velasquez. I would say that GSP at his prime was probably one of the best in that business.
Right. Okay.
Yeah. I can understand Jones. You know, I just think that Jones, they rely too much on Jones for him to kind of fuck up at the end. I think Dana and the shareholders need to realize that maybe it's time that we give this guy time to recover from the demons in his head and not constantly book him for fights if he's going to fuck up again. You know, kind of let him just take his air and, you know, go of his life and recover from whatever he seems to be going on in his life. Same goes for Silva. I think Silva's kind of a little bit overrated, but I can understand the talent and how he's good. And I know you're gonna agree with me on this, Travis. I'm kind of mad we never got GSP versus Silva in their prime.
Yes. So also, I heard something about when Matt Hughes was in his prime, he wanted to fight Anderson Silva, and Anderson Silva wanted to fight him. But Dana White was like, "No, we can't do that because you guys are both champions."
Yeah, and I think Dana realizes now that, like, oh, I fucked up there.
Yeah. Fuck you, Dana. Fuck you. Like, I wanted to see that fight. Like, even though I don't agree with as much as I dislike Anderson Silva, I don't agree with you saying he's overrated. This man was a machine. Like, he didn't even, like, fight people. He just came out there and danced and then knocked them out with the feather punches. Like, when he knocked Forrest Griffin out, he didn't even touch him. He came close, and Forrest Griffin fell to the ground and gave up. Literally, watch the replay. Like, that's literally what happened. Like, the aura of fucking Anderson Silva was enough to beat Forrest Griffin. Like, he didn't even have to fight him.
Yeah. I just find the guy a little bit too much at times, but I realize his talent, how good he is, so I would never deny. You know, my feelings aside about who the person is and how I feel about them, I would never deny the talent. Like, yes, it's going to take everything in me, but when Brock came in to UFC, he was the best thing about the heavyweight division. And, you know, sadly, he got his ass kicked, and then somebody came in to take its place, and Kane really ended up being one of the best things about the heavyweight division at the time, and probably one of the best, probably the best heavyweight is Kane. But at the time that Brock came in, he was the best thing about the heavyweight division because it was a division that was that was lacking a lot of star power.
Very true. I agree with that. What was I about to say, though? What about GSP Connor?
Ooh. Right now?
Yeah, right now.
Oh, man. You know what always kind of interested me? I would like to see BJ Penn go up against Connor than GSP.
Yeah, I agree with that's a good thing because GSP and BJ or I'm sorry, Connor McGregor and BJ Penn have very similar styles, as in they both are that kinetic energy, fast twitch muscle, where they basically, there's a higher chance of one of them knocking the other out in the first round than there is of them knocking someone out in the fifth round.
Yeah.
Does that make sense? Where GSP, while he's a great striker, he never ever relied on striking. He almost always would take his opponents to the ground, maul them the way that Khabib does, the way that Tyron Woodley does. Tyron Woodley versus GSP or Khabib versus GSP or Khabib versus Tyron Woodley, or I don't even care, throw them all in the Cage and Lamal fight. That'd be a crazy fight. Like, it wouldn't be good for, like, casual fans because they would be wrestling. But, like, I was a wrestler and throughout school, so, like, I like those kind of fights. But, yeah, it'd be a crazy fight.
Yeah, and I think that's the reason why we wanted Anderson Silva versus GSP so much was because they're both very ground type of guys. So we wanted to see those motherfuckers wrestle.
In there. Yeah, right.
For Connor and him. I would like to see BJ Penn versus Connor more.
That's, I heard BJ Penn's coming back. Hold on, I'll look that up real quick. Make sure I'm not telling tall tales outside of school. shit, hold on.
I know that GSP is like around here and around there, you know, like he's not constantly coming back for fights, but I guess if he gets called for one and it's enough for him to want to come back and do it, I guess he comes back for them.
Good.
Yeah, for y'all who didn't watch GSP in his prime, y'all missed out so much. The man was absolutely incredible. Truly, now that I'm thinking about it more, I think GSP was the GOAT at the time that he was in his prime.
Yeah. So BJ Penn is fighting Ryan Hall at 145 pounds. Hold on. He is fighting him on December something. I think 29th. Yeah, December 29th at UFC 232. Which is odd. So there's a story that BJ Penn wanted to fight Randy Couture when Randy Couture was a heavyweight champ. And that's the most badass thing I've ever heard in my life. He said, fuck a weight class. Let me fight them all.
Imagine that fight. Oh my God. Because when Randy Couture was heavyweight champion, he was a badass. Like, I feared anybody who would get into the ring with Randy Couture.
Yeah, that's it. It was crazy. Like, and then you're gonna let fucking 145 pound BJ Penn. He said, "Look, I'm ready to fight you right now. Square up, motherfucker."
That's one of my favorite. He doesn't get as much love. And he was the only man to really take Jones
there. Who is it?
Alec Gustafsson?
Oh, yeah, yeah, okay, yeah, yeah. The UFC's been posting a lot of pictures from them, or from that fight. Yeah. I think that might be the next Jones fight.
Gustafsson was... He's a beast, bro. Gustafsson took fucking Jones to the city, and he lost that fight. But if I would have been just guessing by how they left each other, I would have given fucking Gustafsson the belt that day. But the man is amazing, man, and what he is so good. I'm very surprised he hasn't won a belt in that damn company.
I'm not, because he has the greatest and the second greatest fighter of all time with John Jones and Daniel Cormier at the top of that division. That's the only thing. It's just. Go ahead, what?
And 31. Oh my God, the man's 31, so he has a lot of time left in the UFC. So, he's 205 pounds. Holy shit, 6'5", 205 pounds. Wow, with a 201 centimeter reach. Holy Jesus. Shit, man. Holy shit.
How old is John Jones? Anybody know?
Oh my God.
Hold on, I just pulled it up. He's 31 as well.
Oh, damn. Yeah. I never see a lot of love for Gustafsson, but he is really good. His record right now is 18-4. And that's...
Who do you lose to? John Jones and who else? DC. I know that.
Yeah, I think he did lose to DC. I'm trying to pull up the record here. So he won, okay, he lost to DC, yes. He lost to Anthony Johnson. He lost to John Jones. and he lost to Phil Davis.
Those are actually all very big, big name people. Like, those are the top of the division. So, like, that's not anything to be ashamed of. Like, because if we're looking at, hold on.
Oh, shit, and he beat Thiago Silva.
Oh, yeah.
Holy. Yeah.
If we're looking at Cain Velasquez's record, he's 14 wins, 2 losses.
And the only one to give it to him was, what's his fucking name? I can never pronounce his name correctly.
Fabricio Verdum?
Yeah, I can never pronounce his name
correctly. His name is Spanish, and you can't pronounce his name?
No, he's not Spanish. I think he's Brazilian.
Is he? He is Brazilian. You are correct. I am incorrect.
Yeah, I can never pronounce his name correctly.
And then Junior Dos Santos knocked him out.
Yeah.
But he beat...
Which those aren't really bad losses. You know, they're really big names. And they're people who obviously brought the fight. And if you want to look at Brazilian man's fight, Cain had barely came back from injury. He didn't train as much as he did. That's why on the next fight, he beat his ass when he fought against him again. He was a fully trained... He was fully recovered, Cain, and he came back to whoop his ass. You know,
exactly. So, yeah. He's 14-2. That's fucking scary. I just want Cain to come back and kick somebody's ass. He hasn't fought since Lesnar fought.
Yeah.
He hasn't fought since
UFC. I want to see him come back.
Good.
But part of me thinks like they probably haven't given him a good match to want to come back to.
I think he's injured.
Oh, really?
Yeah. I think he's injured. Let me look.
Yeah.
Unless
you want to go off from MMA because, you know, how much minutes do you have up in this already?
How many minutes do we have?
No, I mean, like, how much?
We're in an hour. We're in exactly an hour.
Yeah.
hold on one sec. So, apparently he had a rematch against Verdum on December 30th, 2016 for UFC 207. But the Nevada State Athletic Commission failed to approve Velasquez the fight, determining after physical examinations and interviews that he was unfit to compete due to bone spurs on his back. Thank you, Wikipedia, for that answer.
So, yeah, he's kind of been injured then.
Yeah, he's injured, which I think he went to... hold on one second. I think the WWE thing was just to... Like, I think he was in a contract negotiation.
Yeah. I need to jump ship to WWE. I think after seeing how Rousey's doing there,
I
think he's like, hey, I might want to give this WWE thing a shot. I'd love for them to bring in more Latino superstars, especially with Rey coming back, and them just form another new like Latino World Order type of thing.
Right. I would be okay with that. I just don't want it. The only thing is, I just don't want every single person to come from Mexico or Latino thing to be. I don't want them to be all cruiserweights or all high flyers. I know that's huge.
Have Rey in there. Have Cain be the leader. Be really the heavy hitter. And then you get some other people because I mean, right now I can't really name at the top of my head Latino superstars and.
Yeah.
And, who aren't cruiserweights in the WWE.
Yeah, I don't know anybody. That's the thing. They're all cruiserweights.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. All right.
Are you excited for the Evolution pay-per-view?
Oh, of course. Dude, I fucking love what I love that idea. I remember when they announced that, people were like kind of they were complaining about it. I thought it was just like it's a brilliant idea. It's gonna sell. I don't see the problem with them doing this. Honestly, Vince knows what sells and knows what's gonna get money in his pocket. So him going for an all woman pay per view is a fucking genius idea.
I agree. I definitely agree with that. Did you see that there is speculation that Shawn Michaels will be coming out of retirement?
Look, man, I every time that rumor comes up, I never believe it because Shawn made a promise to Undertaker that he was going to be his last match.
Well, he's still facing Undertaker. according to this this speculation. It's supposed to be Triple H and Shawn Michaels versus Undertaker and Kane at Crown Jewel.
Damn. Oh, well, if that does happen, then maybe that's the exception to the rule. But if I think the best time for Shawn Michaels to have come back was to face Daniel Bryan at that time, when for the student versus teacher thing.
Yeah.
That would have been the time. Anything after right now, it's like there's just no way to go about it. Just stay retired or just do these matches where we're one night only with who you want to fight, you know, like.
Yeah.
It's just hard to go about it in his situation.
For sure. Yeah. All right. I am actually going to cut this short because, well, not short, it's an hour long. But I don't want to make this 3 hours long. We can definitely talk for 3 hours. So I'm actually going to call this episode part one because I'm sure we have more we can talk about. I can have you as a guest again. Thank you for coming on. What is it?
I didn't even go into music or wrestling or film. I didn't even talk about my love for film. And that goes deeper. We can definitely do a part two.
Exactly. I feel it. So thank you again for coming on the podcast. Thank you for being my first guest. This went exactly how I wanted it to. So I really hope it recorded. We were having some technical difficulties first to begin with this. Yeah. And we were just kind of like, fuck it, we'll do it. And if it works, it works. If it doesn't, fuck it.
I like the format. You know, you kind of asked me about the personal stuff. We got that out of the way. And we kind of segued into my interest. So now in part two, we can talk about the interest and really those things in my life that revolve around who I am. You know, it's, you know, we went through the whole mental health and disability stuff and my culture. And now we can talk about, you know, how film and music and wrestling really create this idea of who Raul is. So I like that.
Yeah, I honestly didn't really have any kind of a plan. There's no format.
Yeah.
It's just I kind of came on here and I had an idea of what I wanted to talk to you about. But yeah, there's never any sort of plan, document, format, anything like that. It was just, hey, let's talk. Yeah, I like this. Hopefully this keeps to be that way. What'd you say?
Yeah. You want me to plug in my social media and stuff like that?
Yeah, go ahead.
All right, guys. Well, thank you. You guys can find me on Twitter and Instagram at The Nerdy Chicano. That is The Nerdy, CHICANO on Twitter and Instagram. You can follow my podcast company at Twitter at The Nerdcore _ and on Instagram at The Nerdcore. That's not CORE. It's The Nerd, CORPS. So you got to do it like that. You're available. We're available. The podcasts are available wherever you can find them. You know, iTunes, Google Podcasts, Spotify, Anchor. We do live shows on YouTube every month. It's going to be turning into bi-weekly, though. Shh, don't tell anybody because they don't know that yet. but yeah, that's where you can find my work. I guess I'll go into about my film career in part two because you can find me on YouTube at Raul Alejandro Mendoza. Just search up that. It'll be the first one. It'll be a black and white picture of me. Oh, not even a black and white picture of me. It's a really colorful one with me in a suit.